technology has taken over so much in education now that, you know, you have this huge line item in a budget that's computers and switches and cables and all these things. And sometimes it's like, would it be easier just to go back to pencil and paper and textbook? Mm-hmm. And would there be benefits? You know, and I think there really has to be kind of a balancing act with that, because you got to help set kids up for their future, which is going to be using technology.
Yeah, it's not going away, right? It's definitely not going away. Yeah.
And then you have the, you know, like, get off my lawn, kids don't know cursive. It's just, we're in just such an interesting spot in society and education.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Jeff Punches. Jeff is the superintendent at East Jackson Community Schools in Jackson, Michigan, which I lived in Jackson for 19 years. So I'm super excited about this conversation because, boy, this was in our backyard. This is where Lighthouse was born. So, Jeff, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about East Jackson Community Schools. Give us a little bit of demographic information. And then how did you become the superintendent there?
Yeah, so East Jackson Community Schools is located on the east side of the city of Jackson. So we have a little bit of that, and then we go east into Jackson County. So it becomes pretty rural. So our district right now is about 740 kids. 10 years ago, we were over 2,000.
Wow.
The recession in Jackson really impacted families, and a lot of people left the area to seek better opportunities financially. So our district is very diverse, racially, socioeconomic, financially. I mean, it's pretty, for a small district, we've got a little bit of everything, ELL students, you name it. So I came to East Jackson. I actually was in education for 4 or 5 years. And then I got laid off kind of that same time the recession hit and everybody was downsizing and I couldn't get a job. And I went into data management, healthcare data management.
Wow.
And I learned the ropes on that. And then I got into training. My heart's always been in education, relationships, working with people, giving back. So I immediately gravitated to that. I did that for about 5 years and I went to my wife and I said, I'm not happy. You know, I'm working a day job. I have people that I connect with at work, but I don't feel like I'm making a difference. So I took a little bit of a pay cut to go here to work here at East Jackson to be the athletic director and assistant principal at the high school, and did that for about 6 years. My wife and I had twin daughters, and I realized that I could not put 90 hours a week in a gym or an athletic field anymore. And I moved into a middle school principal position. That's always been where my heart has been, that age group, even when I taught and coached. One day, you know, they're farting and laughing in class. The next, you're having very mature conversations. And I always felt like that's kind of the last time with kids that you can change their path and their trajectory, because right when they get to high school, you get 15, 16, there's got to be some major situation that happens that really makes them make some different life choices. So I loved it, just the amount of mentoring I could do and conversations. And with our demographic of kids, you know, some have two-parent homes. Most of them are single-family homes. A lot of kids live with their grandparents. So, you know, there's just not a lot of conversation and mentoring happening in a lot of these kids' lives, and they just don't have a lot of good adults to look up to. So, I mean, that was probably my favorite part of being a middle school principal, was just those aha conversations with kids. And it's probably because I was that kid when I was, you know, young. And I joke with my daughters because they're in first grade, but Dad did not get very many recesses when he was that age. I did a lot of
copying.
You
were in detention?
Yeah, I mean, I would do something stupid out on the recess. Sometimes I was a big kid, so two-hand touch football to me turned into, you know, the 80-pound kid went flying, or the merry-go-round, somebody got hurt, or tetherball, and I would get in trouble. And it wasn't because I did anything on purpose, but I was just, you know, a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
So, I was always very academically gifted, but I just emotionally, socially, I struggled. And that's where, you know, I had a social worker, Mr. Kent, that, man, he made a difference in my life. A lot of good conversations. He made things athletic. So sharing, we did a lot of ball games where he'd ask a question, he'd throw me the ball. I thought it was cool. I'd answer, I'd throw it back, you know, typical boy. If a ball's involved, it was amazing. I had some really great teachers. I had a third grade teacher, Mrs. Grantham, that was just, she really, changed my trajectory. And then sports, hockey and basketball were just difference makers in my life because there was consequences to breaking the rules. Basketball, you got too many fouls, you had to sit there and watch people. And then you had the peer pressure of you're letting your team down because your teammates and your coach would get angry because, when I was that age, I was so much bigger than other kids, and that was a huge advantage. And I loved hockey. And you did something stupid. You sat in the sin bin, the penalty box, for 2 minutes. And you got to watch everybody play, and then your team's down a man, and people got quite upset if the other team scored a goal. So it really made me realize that there was some real consequences to behavior. And without some key people in my life, my dad, my grandpa, some other coaches along the way, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And, so that to me is just a lot of people put money in my piggy bank to help me through life. So for me, it was huge to do something to give back. So coaching, teaching, now I'm superintendent. That was something that I always wanted to do, but it was a down the road type of thing. I did not think at 40 years old, I would be a superintendent of a district that I had worked in for a while. But it's been a blessing. I was just talking to somebody today that there's days where you're like, man, this is hard. This is awful. Why do I do this? But there's days where it's a blessing. And, you're like, you're really doing work that very few people do. And I think that's the challenge. I think being the competitive person I am is I can do that. I can fix that. We can make a difference. So for me, as superintendent, that enrollment piece that I mentioned earlier, how do we build that? Our kids are underserved. The resources are not available like they are to some other kids in other areas of the state or the country. So I've been blessed that, I have some great relationships with people in our district. I'm blessed with some amazing principals, social workers, administrators that, they really believe in my message. And, there's no sense complaining. There's no sense sitting here in no how. We just got to find a way because those kids deserve it.
Right.
Every decision I do is always based on, is it in the best interest of kids? And if it is, I'm going to sleep like a baby. The things that keep me up at night are the decisions that I have no control over, funding, legislation, things like that I know are going to severely impact the kids of East Jackson, the kids in Michigan, the kids in our country. Those are the things that bother me. And I think that's what makes it real difficult in my position. Because a lot of what we do in education is reactive, and you just got to make the best of a bad situation sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really tough when the people that, and that's why we do this, right? We are sitting down and having conversations with superintendents and special education directors, because my heart is special education. Obviously I'm an SLP. I have been, for 30 years, and those kids, they need us so badly. And everybody wants the kids to be successful. They are our future. They are the next generation. And you guys are fighting for them every single day. And it just is, it's so incredible. I'm really prayerful that somebody will hear this podcast, and one of the podcasts that are many of them, and realize that there are so many amazing people in the United States that are doing things, and we are working in a broken system, truly.
Yeah, and I mean, the kids, it's no fault of their own. I mean, it's not like somebody gets to pick them and say, hey, do you want to be in this, household? Do you want to be in this family? I mean, it's, it's one of those things where I always say that we can either invest in them now or we can react later. and we're going to have to, you know, take care of them, you know, as adults. And I want to give every kid a chance. Sometimes I don't think that's reality. But like I said, we don't get to make the game or the rules. We just got to play it. And you know, education's hard, you know, social work's hard, law enforcement's hard. There's a lot of jobs, careers that are just very thankless. But I think people do it because they want to make a difference. They want to help. They want the relationships. I could never work from home. I have some friends that work from home, and I need the interaction with people. When I'm having a bad day, I go up and I see my kindergartners, my first graders that just have a love and enthusiasm for life because they're experiencing a lot of things for the first time.
Right.
And I think it gives you a lot of inspiration as adult that, you know, there is hope. And sometimes as adults, we get negative and we get down and, you know, kind of depressed about things, but that's the place where I love to go. And I feel rejuvenated, and it gets me kind of back and sets my compass. You know, you got your lighthouse there. For me, that's my lighthouse, that it really says, hey, Jeff, you know, you're going in a direction today that isn't good. And it kind of helps reset me. And my kids do the same thing. You know, there's just something about a young kid and hogs and, you know, you get treated like you're the Beatles or something when, and it just, I don't know. I think that's
what's all about. You're a celebrity to them, aren't you? Because you're the superintendent. You're not in there. You're not in there every day. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. And it makes you just feel good about what you're doing.
Yeah. Cause every single decision that you make helps them to have a better educational system, and you're working always in their best interest. And that's amazing. That's really amazing. And that's tough, you know. So when you talk about the recession, are you talking about like in 08, 09 or
that time period there, 08 to like 2012. I mean, it didn't help in Michigan that there was a lot of retirement changes. And I think you saw that a lot in a lot of state retirement plans. And I think that negatively impact education, you know, law enforcement, corrections. A lot of people, that was kind of the, hey, we can't pay you a lot, but the benefits are, you know, great. And when we changed that and we kind of turned it more to a 401k system, I think you lost a lot of talent. And I think if you look here in Michigan, which was one of the top producing states for educators, I mean, you go to some of these big universities like Central Michigan and they're graduating one math teacher a year. I mean, when I came out at Eastern, I mean, I was in huge lecture halls and it was so competitive.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons my wife and I, we went to South Carolina, and that was our first real taste of education down there because you couldn't get a job in Michigan. Now, you know, we've got all kinds of grants in place to try to, hey, you know, you've got a bachelor's degree. Let's go through this alternative pathway.
Yeah.
Because we need people who are passionate that want to do the work. And, you know, it's just crazy how in, you know, 10 years, 15 years, how dramatic things change.
What if every student could work with a therapist who brings not just credentials, but years of experience and wisdom to the table? At Lighthouse Therapy, most of our therapists have over 16 years of real world experience. We don't just fill seats. Instead, we find therapists who've seen it all and know how to help. And every new therapist is paired with a mentor to help them guide them every step of the way. Whether through virtual, hybrid, or in-person delivery, your students are getting services that's thoughtful, experienced, and genuinely human. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter-together to learn more. Yeah. Yeah, that was a tough time. We, you know, we lived in Michigan at that time too, and my husband lost his job and he went back to school, and now he's my CTO. You know, he went back and got his degree in computers, but there was no work. There was no, and we were trapped in our house too because our property values just plummeted, and we ended up staying there were people that just walked away. They walked away from mortgages and houses because they were trapped in them and they didn't think there was any relief. And that was a tough time for sure. Yeah. Lots of changes. Good stuff too, though. I mean, it's a beautiful state. Michigan is a beautiful, beautiful state, especially in the summer. Not so much. I don't like the cold, but
yeah. Yeah. I tell you, you get up to northern Michigan and it to me, you get up around Traverse City and, you know, up there in that area on Lake Michigan, it's picturesque.
Yeah.
You know, you got the lakes and you got all the inland lakes and the wineries. And I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff to
Cherry
do.
Cherry Festival. Yeah.
Yeah. That's usually a good recharge place in the summer to go to. Yeah.
We always went over to Silver Lake. We had a Jeep, so we would take it to the sand dunes in Silver Lake. And then we would go up to Mackinac sometimes. And then we went up to Tequamanon Falls one year. And that's cold water, but beautiful. Even in the summer, it's cold up there, but the water was cold. But still. But I'm a wimp. I don't like the cold at all, at all. I mean, it's like... What is it? It's December 3rd right now, and we're having a cold snap here in Corpus Christi, Texas. And you can tell me what your temperature is. It's 62, and I'm in long sleeve and a turtleneck and a sweater and shoes and socks and all of that because it's too cold for me. And I'm sure there it's probably what in the teens.
Yeah, it feels like 14. And you know, it's usually like that first week of that weather. You're like, why do I live here? This is awful. And then, you know, everybody kind of adjusts to it. Yeah.
Yeah. But you guys got snow early. I mean, that's November. There was just a snowstorm. It's usually not that early, I don't think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they were predicting about a foot of snow. We got about 6 inches. But I mean, I remember a kid. My birthday is on Monday, December 8th. And I remember that was always like the, hey, are we going to get the school day off for your birthday? And a couple times I did have no school on my birthday, which was pretty cool. But,
and then we would even have snow days in April. I remember having, when I was working for Jackson Public, I had snow days in April.
As a kid, like, I just love school. So, I mean, you got to do a lot more outdoor stuff when you had school off. But, now, you know, snow days are great, but it has consequences on, you know, families that, you know, they've got to find child care for their kids. Yeah. And, you know, you got a lot of that you have to think about now as a superintendent. So, but then you have safety and all that you have to think about too. So that's always a fun. Right. Juggling
balancing
the pros
act,
and cons.
Yeah, juggling. Yeah. What's the best answer, right? And no one's ever going to 100% agree with the choice that you made, are they?
No, but what I definitely don't, I don't want to come in and know that, you know, a car crash or something happens. And because that would be, you know, just an awful feeling to second guess yourself there. So I always try to, you know, default to, would I want my kids driving, you know, in that weather? Would I want my wife, you know, commuting to work in that? And that usually gives me a pretty good answer on what to do.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. For sure. Yeah. That is one thing that's funny about Corpus Christi. It's like, if it gets cold here, or if they say there's a potential that it's going to snow, they shut down. Not even like it may not even happen, and they still shut down because they don't know how to drive in it. They don't know how to deal with it. And it's funny coming from a state where, you know, it's like I met my husband in Syracuse, New York. I mean, it's like when I first started out of grad school, I worked at Camillus Health and Rehabilitation Center in Syracuse, New York. And I remember the first snowstorm. I moved there in February. Don't move to Syracuse in February. Oh my gosh, it was cold. But horrible snowstorm. And I called and I was like, what do I do? It's horrible. What do I do about coming to work? You know what they said to me? You come to work. There was no, you don't not come to work because of snow. That just was, you know, all that lake effect snow. So the things that you learn as you grow, right? And the way that we handle it here versus there versus, you know, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So one last question. So
sure.
If you could miraculously, Jeff, fix one thing that in your world as a superintendent, it can't be money because we know everybody needs money. Everybody needs more money. But if you could miraculously fix one thing as a superintendent and never have to deal with it again, what would that one thing be?
Well, I think it's like two. I would get rid of cell phones and social media. I think it's the impact it has on even adults. I mean, kids are addicted to it. It's impacting every minute of their day, their life. It's like, you ever seen Lord of the Rings? It's like the precious ring of Smeagol.
Oh yeah.
That is, you know, and everybody has their different ideas on things to do. You know, we, we've tried to be proactive and eliminate it from the classrooms. But I mean, short of searching kids every day, it's kind of a uphill battle. It puts a lot of pressure on teachers. And you know, then you have the whole aspect of you're turning something into a discipline problem. And then you have all the drama that comes from, you know, Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram. You've got the mental health impact on kids, girls specifically, you know, body images, filters. And then you have what people think of is kind of an unattainable lifestyle, that they see, you know, influencers on social media. So it's kind of crazy. I remember when I graduated high school in 2002, and I remember I got this sweet Nokia cell phone, and it could get like 100 minutes, and it was like, what do you do with this thing? And now it's even, you know, kids that, you know, they can't afford other parts or other things in their life, somehow they have a cell phone. And it you know, as a dad, and I think towards the future, like, what am I going to do? Because my kids are going to have that social pressure of a cell phone. However, as a principal, the things I've seen on a cell phone, I don't want to ever experience as a father.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, we kind of let the cat out of the bag with the dependence on, you know, cell phones and social media. And I mean, even my job as a superintendent, I would say 70% of my day, I'm working on it, checking emails, calling, texting. And it allows you to kind of cut that cord from the office. And I think all the time, like, how did people do this when I was in school?
Right.
You know, like, yeah. I got to check my voicemail, and then you get a call, and there was no email, and then there was email. And I just think technology is just, it's advancing at such a rapid pace that I think it makes it tough for everybody. It makes it tough for schools, law enforcement, the government, parents. I mean, how do you keep up with it? But at the end of the day, it's negatively impacting kids, their development. It's making it harder for teachers, because I don't know if you've gone on and seen some of the AI and TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
A principal of mine was showing me videos from Martin Luther King, and it's crazy, these I Got a Dream speeches that people have modified. And it's like, how do you design a lesson as a teacher to draw in the curiosity and the attention of a kid when these videos are on social media that are just so much more, you know, attracting to a kid? And it's a hard proposition. I think education needs to have kind of a reboot in how we're doing a lot of things. So yeah, cell phone, social media, if those went away, I would be happy.
Yeah, there's I've interviewed some different school districts, and you know, Texas, they've banned cell phones from high schools. I don't know the law, so don't quote me on the law, but I know they've at least high school, I think it might be all schools, I'm not sure, but I know it's been a conversation that we've talked about. And then in Maine, one of the first interviews that I did, they took some of their COVID money and they bought these packet things that you can put the cell phone, lock it in there, and they have a whole system. And but they've seen some incredible success with it, because you know they are doing something that, you know, the kids are seeing the difference of not what's like to not have the cell phone versus having the cell phone, and how quiet the lunchroom was when the cell phones were available versus once they took the cell phones out of all the kids' hands, the volume went way up because the kids are now talking to each other and not sitting there just texting and whatever, you know, how you do. And you see it, you even see it in restaurants, you know, whole families will come. The cell phones are not allowed at the table at my house. You do not have your cell phone at the table at my house, because it's like, I want you to talk to me. My kids are all grown, you know, so I can make my own rules. I was like, don't come to my house to visit, to be on your cell phone, just texting and playing a game or whatever. If you're coming to visit me, visit with me. Right.
Right.
But it's absolutely incredible when you can get it out of their hands and help them to realize that they don't have to be dependent on the next Snapchat or, you know, the next whatever, TikTok or whatever. And that there's human beings around me that I can talk to and interact with and joke with and have fun with. And so I agree with you. It's definitely something that a lot of schools are struggling with, a lot of people are struggling with trying to make sure that, because we don't want them dependent on that. And I think too, if you ask my opinion, some of the social emotional, like you were talking about with the TikTok and with the girls wanting to get the next like or whatever, that's feeding into that. They're just feeding into their insecurities and that is not healthy at all. So I agree with you.
Yeah. And then you have people that they can't have conversations. And, you know, technology has taken over so much in education now that, you know, you have this huge line item in a budget that's, you know, computers and switches and cables and all these things. And it's sometimes it's like, would it be easier just to go back to pencil and paper and textbooks? Mm-hmm. And would there be benefits? You know, and I think there really has to be kind of a balancing act with that, because you got to help set kids up for their future, which is going to be using technology.
Yeah, it's not going away, right? It's definitely not going away.
Yeah, and then you have the, you know, like, get off my lawn. Kids don't know cursive. It's just, we're in just such an interesting spot in society and education. You know, like, and I have parents like, how am I supposed to get a hold of my kid? Well, I mean, I don't know how it was when you were in school, but your parents called the school.
Yeah.
And I remember going on before it was the Geico commercial or whatever, and calling my dad and being like, you know, hey dad, I'm staying for the basketball game. Okay. And that's how I communicated to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it can be done. But man, it sure would make everybody's job a lot easier if we didn't have those, you know, in the hands of kids.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Gen Xer. So, you know, we grew up with get out of the house until 6 o'clock. And then you better be back at the house at 6 o'clock when dad comes home for dinner. And there was no cell phone. There was no, you know, you had to turn the water on if you wanted a drink and let it run for a little bit, or it was going to be hot water to get that drink of water. Yeah. And just stuff like that. You know, we survived, people. You can absolutely survive without a cell phone. You truly can. I know nobody believes that anymore, but you can. You can live without a cell phone. You can live. We used to, and no CDs or, you know, we used to do mixtapes to get the music off of the radio. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And no instant anything. There was no instant. No Instagram. No Facebook. No, you know. Yeah, different worlds, definitely a different world.
I'm so glad that I was able to grow up, you know, in the 80s and 90s and not, you know, I mean, our biggest problem was like diabetes from all the sugar and all the dyes and everything that got shoved down.
Red dye number 7 or whatever it was.
Yeah, no helmets, no, you know, like how did you not, you know, like have a massive injury, you know, because of all the safety things that we just
no
had no
belts.
Idea. Yeah. And it's
belts. No car, you know, seats.
Yeah. Nope. And here we are. But, you know, I think sometimes like these kids, they don't have a chance because they have all of these factors at play that, I mean, how do you get a kid to really care about their future or doing good in this class? And then how it builds, especially when they see like how it's worked out for adults in their family, their neighborhood. And that's where I think, you know, the school really, really comes into play, because that's what we have to do. We have to mentor, we have to inspire, we have to help them. And, you know, we're going to continue to do that until, you know, somebody tells us to do something differently. Right.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, what the answer is. I don't know if there is a good answer. You know, it's like, it's because it's not going away. We know it's not going away. And yet we're dependent on it. And I'm as dependent as anybody else is, because I do own my own business. And, you know, I did learn how to mute it at night, you know, have so that I'm sleeping and not being woken up by my cell phone at somebody texting me at 3 o'clock in the morning. But you still have to everything in moderation, I guess, you know, finding that balance and helping parents to understand that the 3-year-old doesn't need the tablet 24/7. So, yeah. So,
I agree.
Anyway, yeah. All right. Well, tell people, let's let people know where to find you. Give us a plug about East Jackson's website so that if anybody has a questions or whatever, they can reach you.
Yep. So you can find us at eastjacksonschools.org. We have a lovely landing video from our marketing campaign for enrollment from the summer. And we have an app. We have all this wealth of knowledge on our website for people to grab. And, you know, that's really where you can find out more about what we do on a daily basis and, you know, what we have to offer.
Yeah, keep fighting that battle, right? Keep educating those kids. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jeff. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for serving those kids, you know, and coming on and talking with me about it. We don't have all the answers, but we can at least make people more aware of the situations, right?
I couldn't agree more.
Thanks.
Thank you.